Hello and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Bauman. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving art scene and the people that make it happen. Every Friday at 12:30, we sit down at a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these folks. The conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today we are talking to Amy Feldman. Welcome, Amy, to Zero Hour. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background? Did you start out scribbling and drawing as a little kid? Did you fall into it later? How did this happen?
Yeah, I think I've always had an attraction to art and making. Uh-huh. I can remember coloring and mixing colors with crayons with my father at a very young age, and I think I was more concerned about the interaction of color than staying in the lines.
Yeah, right. I never could figure out how people could stay in the lines. I can still remember that. I can remember being little and then telling me to stay in the lines and thinking, this didn't compute. It was like, I don't know how to do that, you know? So my life has continued on that path ever since. I've never been able to stay in the lines. And the closest I've come, I guess, to mixing colors was melting crayons on a radiator, which is really cool. You ought to try it someday. But anyway, so then, yeah, exactly, early in costume. Who knew, you know? So, okay. So you went from there and then on to middle and high school, and somewhere along the line something kicked in and said, yes, I want to do this.
Yeah. My parents are very supportive. They've always been, they're wonderful people, and they've just been so encouraging and loving.
That's
an only child.
Really? Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll treat you royally. Don't worry. Ma'am.
You know how we are.
That's right. Can I get you some more water? Wine? Anything? Waiter?
So high school. I had a fantastic art teacher. And high school, middle school was kind of a transition for me because I went to a private Catholic elementary school. And then I decided that I wanted to go to the public schools because they had such amazing art programs. And I had a fantastic teacher who just really instilled quite a confidence in me.
That's amazing.
And
so you had real drawing abilities at a young age, draftsman abilities, I would assume.
Draftsman, no, not
no,
really.
No, really?
I've always been rather abstract, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
And so I'd be doing these things and I'd be, you know, just putting certain images together. I did a lot of collage. And,
right.
You know, Sabine would always sort of say, or teacher.
Your teacher, yeah.
Sabine, she would always say, you're too sophisticated for that. Like, you know, if anybody commented on my work. But,
right,
you know.
Yeah.
So it was just, you know, I just felt like, you know, I was an artist. And that's, I think, when I really started to define myself as an artist.
Were your parents artists?
No, but my mother's father was an artist.
Ah, so it skipped a generation.
That's what they say.
Yeah, right.
But they're creative people, and they're, you know, they love the arts and they're involved. They took me to museums at a young age.
Yeah.
They're both from New York, and I grew up in upstate New York, about 60 miles outside of the city in the Hudson Valley.
Oh, God.
So it was just nice.
Idyllic.
Yeah.
Yeah, really. Really.
It was great growing up and just having the access to, you know, all the culture in the city. And then.
Yeah. All right. So then you blasted your way through high school and went on to RISD.
The Rhode Island School of Design. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a pretty well-known school, so you must have been doing some pretty impressive work and got a BFA there?
Yes.
What was that like?
RISD was great there.
What is there any way you can articulate what you got out of it? Was it a lot of formal training? Was it more being able to discover on your own voice, your own direction? What was it like for you?
It was an intensive environment.
Really?
And I was in the studio sometimes 12, 15 hours a day.
Wow.
And I loved every minute of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
and
that's
it was
so wonderful.
Just kind of, you know, this idea of a practice, you know, an art practice.
Yeah.
That's
wow.
Where that kind
it's
of
so lucky, I think. So lucky. Because, you know, so many folks spend their whole lives wondering what it is they want to do and, you know, never find what they love. So what did your work evolve to? How did it evolve as you were there? It didn't. Okay. Well, on to the next question. 15 hours in the studio and nothing happened.
I think, you know, for painters, things happen rather slowly. I mean, the first year was we were doing figure drawing and still life drawing and all of that. And then it was kind of like, you know, you would get these assignments and then you'd have to kind of take the assignments and run with it and kind of make your own thing out of the assignment. So,
So at some point you learned how to draw. I mean, what I'm getting at is that when most people think about, except for our sophisticated audience that's listening now, but most people think about art as someone who can draw well, which, as we all know, sort of kind of went out of style at the beginning of the 20th century. But most people still sort of think that way, I think. How did you feel about spending so much time doing figurative drawing? And
well, at RISI, I had kind of off-the-wall professors as and you know, they were very expressive. I had one teacher who came off the tradition of, you know, abacs, and we were all making you know, crazy figure drawings. But
all right, so there was a fit there for you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But you know, I like drawing. I draw in my studio, but I rarely show my drawings.
Right. I noticed that as I went to your website, I clicked on drawings and nothing came up.
That's too bad. Some of them are up there, but they're really like, they're kind of like the undercurrent of the work. Sort of.
What do you mean the undercurrent? That's interesting.
Just where I can kind of flesh out ideas. So I'll make drawings like thumbnail sketches of paintings, and I'll also make drawings with, you know, images in them.
Are they abstract or are they representational images?
They're a little bit of both. I like to kind of, and when I say drawing kind of encompasses anything. A lot of my drawings have photographs in them.
Really?
So I'll have an abstract gesture kind of poised next to a photograph.
What's that about?
Oh.
Hang on, folks, she's drinking. I mean, that's interesting. I would have, looking at your paintings, I would have never thought you were looking at any point at photographs. So these are images that you find where?
Like, just, well, a lot comes from food magazines and kind of create, like, you know, food creations and setups and things like that.
Really?
Like I don't know.
Do you know what attracts you to that?
Food?
Dumb question, huh?
Well, yeah, I mean,
no, the magazines, actually. Gotta save myself somehow here. All right. So you work with images, you work with photographs,
and then abstract from the photographs.
And you abstract from the photographs. Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes.
Well, that I certainly can understand. I mean, when you walk in the studio, right? Do you have any kind of ritual that you do before you get started? And I'm not talking about putting on a headdress and dancing around a totem pole. But it is amazing how many artists actually do have, you know, like, well, you know, I have to get my coffee, and then I have to do this, and then I have to do that, and then I have to do...
I know. Yeah. Well, the problem is I always have to have a cup of coffee,
right,
and I have to have something to eat before I go to the studio. Right. And I kind of like to eat in the studio and just sit there for a little while and look at the work. I feel like a lot of the, you know, much of my practice is just being in the studio and kind of figuring things out.
That's interesting.
Before I actually make the move, and then I'll go against that and just like make these really bold moves, kind of.
Okay, so you go in, you sit down, you stuff yourself.
Basically, I stuff myself.
You stuff yourself. Right? You're in awfully good shape. Some of you stuff themselves, but anyway. And so, and then you're thinking about the work and looking at the work, and then you said something very interesting, and then I do sort of the opposite.
Yeah, well,
what do you mean?
Like when I, it's funny, I've never quite spoken about the work like this before, but I'll just make like, you know, this bold gesture on the surface, kind of like going against, you know, all of these, you know, small moments that I've had with myself in constructing a singular line or, you know, a bold plane of color. Well, I want there to be this kind of like, element of grit in the work, and I want there to be this kind of gesture in each painting that in some way destabilizes the viewer. Like there's some kind of defiance that's played out on the surface. So that's why I use the spray paint, and that's also why I sometimes cut into the paintings.
So does that get into the whole issue of desire and cutting against?
Desire and control, and just sort of like the pleasure in making that kind of mark.
Right. And desires are, I mean, you know, desires, one of the things, funny things about desires is they're not, you know, mm-hmm. they're not things that you sort of come up with intellectually. They're just sort of there.
Yeah, and for me, I think a lot of it is tied actually to appetite uh-huh. and eating. That's why
really?
the food images recur so much in my work.
Right.
And the paintings, people who are listening don't know my paintings, but they're large uh-huh. abstract paintings that
right.
are ultimately about fulfilling pleasure in painting, and kind of like seeing this desire kind of played out in sort of this, you know, loud way. I guess you could.
Are there any, I mean, just the obvious question, just because we live in this kind of culture, are there sexual overtones?
Into the work, yeah, there is. Well, the paintings are these abstract kind of gridded paintings,
uh-huh.
and then I let the paint be paint. I let the viewer see the liquid quality of
right.
the paint. So there's a clumsiness to the paint, and a kind of, you know, it like it dilly dallies, it drips
uh-huh.
Kind of everywhere.
Right.
It's out of the line.
So you're right.
So that to me is the introduction of the body, and then uh-huh. I introduce the body in kind of a caricatured way.
How do you see that as the introduction of the body? That's interesting.
The liquidity.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
Like,
well, I guess we are.
Like a mucusness that
yeah,
I see also
right,
is tied
right.
to, you know, food substances.
Uh-huh.
And not just, you know, food substances, but these like artificial petrochemical food substances.
Right,
you know,
right.
So I want there to be this kind of artificiality uh-huh. to the paintings as well.
Wow. So you're thinking.
But it also, you
where
know.
Does control come in with all that? I mean, you talk about diametrically opposed. Well, let's take a short break here. We are talking to Amy Feldman, who is a graduate of Rutgers University's MFA program. And she is also the winner of the VCU Arts Painting Printmaking Residency Fellowship at VCU and Plant Zero for 2008-2009, which means that she gets to spend some time in the studio and also teach at VCU and interact with the students there. Well, let's get back to our interview and our conversation with Amy Feldman. But you're talking about life, and
you're talking about life,
the lack of control, desire, the lack of control of desire. I mean, we're all controlling desires all the time.
Mm-hmm. But we live in this very moralistic society, sort
right.
of.
Right, yeah,
know, this
yeah,
comes
yeah.
from.
I'm sorry, that's not allowed.
But, yeah, right,
young
right.
lady.
There's this element of, you know, look but don't touch, and
right,
it's kind
right.
of obviously based off this, you know, Victorian precedent mm-hmm. that we are constantly trying to seek, you know, an inner balance, I think, almost.
Yeah, but then when you look at advertising is just loaded with sex.
Exactly.
It's bizarre. So it's so ironic.
So that's what I try. I mean, there's that duality involved, mm-hmm. and that's mm-hmm. kind of what I like when we talk about, like, the undercurrent of the work. That
right.
sort of is the undercurrent
okay.
of the work for
okay.
me.
Okay, all right. That duality. That's kind of what I thought. I just didn't want to. So are we talking about duality here? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But, I mean, I mean, the paintings are not heavy. They're funny. When people mm-hmm. come into my studio, I want them to kind of, you know, giggle. They're kind of cheeky. You
mm-hmm.
know, they're a little bit saucy. And I want people to, you know, smile. And, like, I want them to be in on the joke, basically.
Right. What do you see as the joke?
Well, I mean, also in the paintings, there are these, like, caricatured kind of form, these
uh-huh.
little kind of Nickelodeon-esque cloud eyeballs slash, you know, exit holes, and
uh-huh.
You know, that also look like smoke rings and just kind of float across the surface. So,
but you also said you cut into the canvas, or
yeah,
you do,
yeah,
really.
I cut into the surface.
Slash it or cut holes into
no,
it, circles?
No, not in
the
slashing.
Right.
No, not as an aggressive gesture.
Right, right.
More of just another kind of consequential part of the painting,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like a move that I would make when we talked about just sitting in the studio
mm-hmm.
and kind of looking. Like, the move is very you know, carefully articulated,
mm-hmm.
so I'll cut out like a triangular shape. And
right.
I use the triangle a lot in mm-hmm. the paintings to may not come across to the viewer, but the triangle symbol sort of, you know, comes from the food pyramid for one.
<That's>
so, like,
great.
You know, Judy Chicago is a dinner table.
Right.
Of a diamond,
uh-huh.
which is, you know, diamonds are symbols of
uh-huh.
luxury and commitment. And then
right.
there's this undercurrent of, you know, blood diamond sort of
right.
running through that, which is the same thing with sweetness,
right.
The history of sugar attached to the slave trade.
Right. Well, what about femininity and domesticity?
Well, I feel like the femininity and domesticity, the work for me, and I finds its place in the home. Uh-huh. And just looking at those like corners of like, you know, my everyday life,
right.
Where...
I mean, you're talking about a duality again?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's how I go back to, you know, having, like, when I started talking about their abstract paintings that, you know, allow the body to come through, and
right.
they're made with these kind of, like, girly, high-keyed colors.
Right.
So...
Well, you came to Richmond for sort of an honor, really. I hope you see it that way anyway. I think that's the way it's intended to be,
mm-hmm.
right? Talk a little bit about that. What are you doing here? Making these paintings about duality and femininity and domesticity and desire and excess and control.
Yeah, it's not okay to make subversive paintings.
Right, right. They're not subversive at all, right?
Well, I received my MFA from Rutgers University, and I applied for the VCU Painting Printmaking Plant Zero Fellowship,
mm-hmm.
and I was selected to come.
Do you have any idea how many people apply? Did they tell you?
They did, and I forgot,
right,
but quite a number,
really?
I believe. Yeah, cause
that's really cool, because they only pick one of you, right?
Yes.
So you're it? Great.
I still can't believe it. But it's been wonderful to be here. I haven't had the experience, well, except being accepted to graduate school,
right.
I guess, of, you know, somebody really wanting you and really liking your work to bring you to a specific place, and
uh-huh.
it just feels really great to be here. And mm-hmm. Part of the program is I'm teaching a couple of classes at VCU. So
how's that going? Do you like to teach?
I do.
You do?
I taught at Rutgers. Uh-huh. I taught drawing at Rutgers last summer, and I taught while I was a graduate student. That's a great part of their program. Most
uh-huh.
of the
really?
Grad students teach the classes. And here, I just find the students are wonderful and, you know, finding, you know,
right.
all these different ways to express themselves. And
what are you teaching? Sculpture,
painting.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. Sculpture and pottery.
I'm having my students make a sculpture next semester. But,
oh, are you really?
Yeah, I'm
yeah.
kind of toying
with
the
mess with them a little.
Doing that.
Yeah. Okay, guess what? Sculpture.
But no, I think that they're really great and really sharp, and I've been very lucky thus far.
What do you think? Do you get more out of teaching than they do, or is it an even trade?
That's funny. I mean, I have a. I started doing yoga.
In class?
No.
Okay.
No.
Hang
and
on
I have this yoga teacher who at the end of class always says, you know, thank you. I've learned so much more from you than, you know, you will ever learn from me. And I just always, something about that hits me wrong.
Really?
At the end of class. It's like,
well, then you should be paying me, right?
I don't know. It just doesn't sit well with me. And I just didn't understand it. But, you know, I feel that way about my students. You know,
really? Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I, you know, every day I walk into the class, I learn something new from them. It's a real treat.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me about your life here. You're teaching, but then I guess you get to spend a fair amount of time in the studio, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
What's going on there?
I'm sort of continuing the work that I was in a series called Proper Harvest that I was doing at Rutgers as
mm-hmm.
part of my thesis, and
mm-hmm.
I just... making paintings. Right now I'm working on a painting. It's a diptych, which I've never done before, rather large. I'm 7 feet high, and one panel is about 6 feet wide, and the other
really?
Panel is a little under 6 feet. And
so 7 by 12.
Yeah, and
yeah.
they the painting's actually
and you're working in acrylic.
To the wall. Right.
And you're painting on canvas, or what are you painting on?
Yes, I'm painting on canvas.
Okay.
I'm painting on a board, but
uh-huh.
since the paintings are so large, I find that it's easier for me to maneuver with the
yeah, right.
with the paintings on canvas.
Artist killed by falling painting.
5 feet tall, right?
yeah.
But I just find that like now my new paintings are really considering the periphery a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm just like I want the paintings to kind of open up behind the wall. if that makes any sense.
None. What do you mean?
Well, that is sort of has to do literally with the act of I'm still cutting into the canvases and with these triangular forms. And so you'll see this cutout form, and you'll see the wall.
Okay.
And then the color of the wall, which should always be in a good Benjamin Moore sort of decorator's white.
Mm-hmm.
It's sometimes repeated in the painting.
Although you could paint red or something back there if you wanted to really
mess with it.
Right,
but I would like the paintings to be hung on that. They're made to be hung on that color wall.
Okay. I'll sneak in sometime and paint.
Yeah. So they just, you know, kind of examine that periphery a little bit, and that's why I'm sort of, I just made this diptych that concaves to the wall very slightly. It
really?
Goes on a ramp from like 4 inches off the wall to an inch and a half off the wall. So there's a slight...
concave.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But not in a circular fashion, in a ramp.
Well, let's talk about some of the shows you've had. Phoenix Gallery in New York, mm-hmm. solo exhibition, National Juried Exhibition, curated by Henriette Holdish. Did mm-hmm. I pronounce that right?
Yeah, Henrietta Holdish.
Yeah, who's the current... curator of the Whitney's last biennial, I guess. So that's fairly wonderful and impressive. And then Exit Art in New York City, New York. RISD's alumni biennial curated by Robert Storr, who's a former director of the Museum of Modern Art, and now I guess is at Yale.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you've had some impressive people looking at your work and saying, nodding up and down and saying, yes, we like this. And then coming up in May 1st of 2009, which is not that far away, you're going to be at Reynolds Gallery here in Richmond.
Yeah, that's correct.
How do you feel about that?
I'm very excited, actually.
Yeah, there's a lot of wonderful people have shown there.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm trying to think who the last one was there.
Wolf Con.
Yes,
is there now.
It was Wolf Con. Yeah, uh-huh.
And then there's a show upstairs.
Right.
Which Sally has.
Which
a piece
has, yes, my wife has a piece of work in, which someone listening should run out right now and go buy immediately. because we all know how the economy is these days.
Mm-hmm. The economy.
Yeah, really? Let's not talk about that. Let's talk about something else.
But now is a good time for artists to kind of hunker down and make the work,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, right. So you're still working 15, 16 hours a day in the studio?
No.
No?
Mm-mm.
You miss it?
No, I mean, I'm there quite a bit.
Yeah,
I'm there probably
sure.
8 to 10, but not
wow.
every day.
Yeah. Well, because you got to teach, too.
Yeah, teaching takes a little bit more head time than I
had
imagined.
Than you anticipated?
Yeah.
Right.
Because you're not only thinking about your own work, but mm-hmm. you're thinking about the work of, you know, 30 other people.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, my students demand my attention while I'm in class, and they uh-huh. deserve to have it. And,
right.
Yeah.
Is that what you're thinking about doing when you leave, or do you want to try and do this as just make it as an artist, or?
Well,
I mean, you're here for a year, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I'd like to teach. Mm-hmm. I like teaching. I managed corporate accounts for a couple of years and don't want to go back to
you
that.
You did what? What did you do? Did you really?
Kind of, yeah.
Wow.
It was basically taking people out to lunch and telling them that the company had to raise their prices. But it was a good experience for me because
really?
I got
Why?
To deal with you know, a level of... it's about managing time, I guess.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But it was... you know, very anxiety producing. I don't think I can handle that.
I can imagine.
In the future.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I feel like I'll always have a studio practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to continue to make work and hopefully sell work.
Well, and if you teach, you know, as you know, that's an upside and a downside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's that whole thing of, you know, if you get tenure. Does anybody get tenure anymore? I don't know. But if you get tenure, then you're there and, you know, it can be its own golden cage, you
mm-hmm.
know, in terms of
cage, yeah, because you get stuck in one location.
You get stuck in one location I don't know. I guess it depends. I mean, there are plenty of people certainly who have taught who have continued to grow and expand and continue to do wonderful work. And I think there are plenty of people who have started to teach and just got stuck.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope, you know, I don't foresee that happening with my work.
Yeah.
Because I'm actually more, I think it's a level of selfishness.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, I'm more invested in my work, I guess, ultimately.
Okay.
Then,
that's good.
You know.
Yeah. Well, I think that's true of any artist. I think that's true of all artists, but yeah. I think it's very honest, I mean, and very well said. No, really. And guess what we're out of? So we're out of time. But anyway, just to remind folks, the Reynolds Gallery, May 1st, a long way off, 2009. You're going to have a show there. The work is wonderful. If you'd like to go see it online, you can go to www.amyfeldman.org, and your work is available to be seen there online. And I assume people can contact you through that website, yes?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right, that's great. Anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, thank you for having me.
You are absolutely very welcome. And I hope the service here was good. Waiters left
fantastic.
Us alone, which is nice. It's fantastic. And as my good friend Joe Seipel once said, do I have to pay the tip? And the answer is yes. So thank you, Amy Feldman, for talking with us today. And thank you, folks, for listening. We hope to see you on the radio again next Friday at 12:30. This is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us.